This November, voters will decide who their president will be, who will represent them in Congress as well, but also who will represent them in the state legislature. As part of a long-held tradition here at WPR's Western Wisconsin studios, we've held candidate forums for every race within our listening area. Today, we look at the far Western Wisconsin border and the 30th State Assembly District. The 30th Assembly District includes the southwestern corner of St. Croix County and a part of northern Pierce County. Some of the cities, towns, and villages in the 30th include Holton, Hudson, Roberts, and River Falls, just to name a few. Republican Dean Knutson has held the 30th District Assembly seat since 2010, but has decided he will not run for re-election. So, two Republicans are running for Knutson's seat, who will compete in the state's August 9th partisan primary. They are Paul Burning of Hudson and Shannon Zimmerman of River Falls. The winner of that contest will go on to face the lone Democrat in the race, Scott Nelson, and the lone independent in the race, Aaron Taylor, in the November general election. We'll feature a forum with all of those on the general ballot October 10th. Now, to introduce the candidates. First, I'd like to introduce Paul Burning. Paul Burning is an insurance agent from Hudson, co-founder and former CEO of Skybound Technologies in Bloomington, Minnesota, and an active member of the Hudson Daybreak Rotary Club. Paul Burning, welcome to the program.
Well, thanks for having me, Rich. I appreciate coming on. My mother always said that I have a voice for a newspaper and a face for radio, so I get to put both talents at work today, even being
sweet.
Sick.
That's a sweet compliment. Well, yep. We appreciate you coming in, even though you're under the weather a little bit.
Yeah, thanks, Rich.
The other candidate with me today is Shannon Zimmerman. Shannon Zimmerman of River Falls is the founder of Sagen Incorporated and has served with the UW River Falls Foundation Board on the Chancellor's Advisory Committee and as executive in residence at UW River Falls. Shannon Zimmerman, welcome to the program.
Rich, thrilled to be here. Thanks for having me today.
It's a pleasure to have you both, and we appreciate the service that you're willing to put forward for the district and for the state. So, listeners, we also want to hear from you. 1-800-228-5615 is the number to call. If you're within the 30th District or outside of the district, this is your chance to ask direct questions or offer up comments to candidates that are willing to and hoping to represent you, whether you live in River Falls, Hudson, St. Croix County, Pierce County, or elsewhere in the state. These folks represent districts first, state second. So give us a call. Let us know what you think, what your questions are. 1-800-228-5615. You can also post on the West Side Facebook page. So with that, I want to jump into questions. Very basic, very simple question is why? And let me start with Shannon Zimmerman. Why are you getting into politics? Why do you think you're the right person to take over for Dean Knutson and represent the 30th Assembly District in Madison?
Well, Rich, I never really thought of running for office. It was something that, to a large degree, emerged in the course of the past number of months. But first of all, the why. The why I'm running has a lot to do with the many people over the course of the years of building businesses, certainly in the St. Croix and Pierce County areas, that were so supportive of me and so supportive of certainly the dreams that you know myself and my wife had. So, while not a political insider, if you will, I think that's exactly what's needed here. We don't need people who necessarily aspire to be lifelong politicians. What we need are people who get things done. And so my motivation is really to serve the people who I call friends, colleagues, my family. I have two adult sons, my grandchildren. All live and reside in the district. So this is my motivation. I have a handful of very clear objectives that I want to be able to accomplish and then hand the baton to somebody else.
Very good. That actually sounds a lot like, as far as the reason for leaving, Dean Knutson, he was talking about the fact that it's a citizen representative government. The idea is not to stay in there for life. Paul Burning, same question to you. Why are you getting into the race, and why do you think you're the right person to take over for Dean Knutson?
Yeah, thank you. That's a great question, and I've been asked that a lot, of course, being on the campaign trail and talking to folks out there. The reason I'm running is because of the constituents that we have in the 30th District. That area was well-represented and has been well-represented for a very long time, and I feel like it is my duty to step up I make sure that, that chain of great representation continues. I do that for my neighbors. I do that for my friends. I do that for my family that lives inside the district. And I really hope that the voters know where my heart lies and see that my servant heart wants to serve this district in its utmost. Yes, I have some objectives myself, too, that we want to accomplish. And I've been very active in the party the last couple of years in helping campaigns locally. And that's what it boils down to. Like Shannon said, we don't need career-long politicians. We don't need people that are aspiring for higher office in this seat. We need people that are willing to step up, serve, and when the objectives and or the constituents' goals are met, we hand the baton off to someone else just like our predecessors did. So.
Now, both of you say you've got things that you'd like to do. Let's just get one example. And Paul, I'll start with you, and I'll go back to Shannon. What is one example of something that you'd like to do once you take the seat?
That's great. That's a great question. So one of the things I'd like to – one of the goals that we're aspiring to accomplish are to make Wisconsin a go-to in education, especially K through 12 is some of the most vital and important times in a child in an adult's developmental stage, that very influencing times. And we have an opportunity now with that segment of education, the things that have happened recently, fiscal house is in order. We have no unfunded liabilities for quite a long time in that arena. And now we have an opportunity to take the next steps in education, and we're now in the 21st century. It's a completely different era than it was 100 to 150 years ago, and I believe in working closely with educators and listening to them in what we can do to take the next steps to bettering ourselves as not only a region in western Wisconsin, as Wisconsin as a whole, but then to be a shining light for the rest of the country to look to and even the world potentially and say, wow, that Wisconsin, they know what's going on. That's pretty cool, and make Wisconsin kind of an international name.
That would be great. And one quick follow up: does that mean more funding, or does that mean just taking ideas that you hear from educators or whoever?
Yeah, before I decided to run for the assembly seat and talking with my wife, we were actually starting to develop a product for parents and teachers and students and. Excuse me, I'm sorry.
That's all right.
Students and parents and the kind of a triangle. And we were going to integrate that. Of course, running, I can't develop a company like that and then go to the state legislature and say, hey, we should get funding for this particular product. So yeah. I've left that off to my colleagues. To answer your question about funding, it's not necessarily about funding. Mm-hmm. You can get very good value. My wife and I we enjoy getting a good deal, and that's where, you know, we want to try to get the best value for our dollar in education.
Very good. And Shannon Zimmerman, what is one thing? I'm sure you both have lists of these things on your campaign websites that people can check out, but one thing in particular that you'd like to get done as a representative of the 30th Assembly District.
Well, so first of all, to set the stage for this, when we first – my wife and I first started our original business back in 1996 in River Falls, we came from the most humblest of means. And we've been very fortunate and very blessed to build one of the largest employers in the area. That process of doing that slants me naturally towards economic development. Mm-hmm. So a cornerstone certainly for me, and it actually does dovetail into the educational system because I am very active in higher education in different ways the university integrates with business. But to me, District 30 sits next door to a monstrous revenue source. And I think it's the job of legislators, local leaders, to leverage the skills that they have to recruit business, talent of people. I mean, we struggle fiercely. As a large employer, that is a specific category in my objective list that I want to enhance. We don't have a job shortage in River Falls, in Hudson, in Roberts. What we have is a talent shortage. But the way you recruit not only the people but the high-quality companies requires an understanding of what those companies actually look for. So for me, I'm going to go to Madison with a strong message of economic opportunity on the western part of the state, and I really believe that they'll pay attention to what we have to say.
With that, another reminder to listeners, you can call in with your questions or comments for the candidates. We've got Shannon Zimmerman and Paul Berning, two Republicans hoping to take the torch from Dean Knutson in the 30th Assembly District and carry it on to Madison and represent their neighbors and friends. 800-228-5615 is the number to call. Something that it's in the news. It was a big, big week of news. In the wake of shootings in Orlando some weeks ago and then just recently in Dallas, many citizens are asking their government, local government, state government, the federal government, to do something to stem these tragic incidents from happening. Many people have called for restrictions on the sale of military-style rifles and magazines that can hold upwards of 30, 50, or more bullets. Would you consider making it harder for military-style rifles or guns in general to be purchased in Wisconsin? I'll start with you, Shannon Zimmerman.
Well, first off, I think it's worth noting that the unnecessary loss of life is tragic, regardless of how it happens and with what tools. It's just an awful thing. And secondly, before I go on to answer your question, I think this is also a moment and an opportunity for us to also properly recognize the many people, the first responders, law enforcement, who put themselves out there to serve and to protect us every day, because that's something that we can't dismiss here. To answer your question, I am pro-Second Amendment. I have grown up in a military family. I have been a sportsman my entire life. And so, you know, the notion of guns is something that I've grown up with. But I don't believe that it's guns that necessarily are performing this evil. Mm-hmm. These are people who are using a tool, not all that different, for example, than regretfully using fertilizer in Oklahoma City. It was a tool to inflict some destruction, some terror on us. Because if we start to impose greater restrictions on guns, the reality, I believe, is that those people who are actually going to abide by the law are the people who abide by the law today. So doing so will actually weaken our defense capabilities against the evil people that certainly exist in our world, regretfully.
And Paul Berning, same question. Do you know there have been calls to ban what are called assault rifles. There's a lot of debate over what that term actually means, but military-style rifles like AR-15s, for example. Do you think this Wisconsin legislature should step in and make it harder for folks to buy those?
No. And I'll elaborate on that answer, of course. But, of course, we have the Second Amendment. It's been proven in court over and over again. It's mm-hmm. a liberty. It's a constitutional right. The founders wasn't meant just for hunting. As I know on previous shows that you've had, callers have called in and alluded to that it's for hunting. It's not just for that. Mm-hmm. Bottom line is just because I don't have a gun, or just because I don't own one or my neighbor doesn't give them the right to say that Shannon Zimmerman can't have one, mm-hmm. or your neighbor can't have one, or you yourself can't have one. At the end of the day, these are most gun owners are law-abiding citizens. The people who commit atrocious crimes don't care about murder anyway or robbing somebody, and therefore what good would a gun law do except impede on the liberty of the law-abiding citizen when it's all said and done. At the end of the day, we are seeing more and more shenanigans coming from our federal government, including people who are committing crimes and not being indicted or put to trial on those crimes. And therefore, why should we be legislating law from Madison that inhibits, restricts, or impedes the constitutional rights of those constituents that we have? So answer is no. There's already enough in place. As a matter of fact, it might be a bit too much according to the interpretation of the Constitution, but the courts have already fought that out, and I'm not intending to fight that here today.
Okay. And always appreciate a fellow radio or a person that knows when they're clipping. But anyway.
Sorry, I had to back off a little bit there. I could hear myself in the headphones.
I think that you're the first candidate let's go to the phones now. We've got two callers on the line, and first we're going to go to River Falls and Heather. Heather, you are on the air. Thanks for calling in. What's on your mind?
Thank you for taking my call. I'm calling. I have an adult special needs daughter who we've had a lot of difficulty with program Medicaid waiver programs like IRIS, which when it started, I'm not sure that the state wanted it to be successful. It proved to be very successful, and the person providing care to my daughter ended up having her pay cut in half over the last 5 years. We've also had great difficulty in finding crisis beds when there is a crisis. And I'd like to hear from both candidates what their thoughts are on the state of mental health and adults with disabilities in our state and what they would like to do while they're in Madison involving those issues.
Fantastic question. We appreciate it, Heather.
That is a great question.
And let me go first to Shannon Zimmerman.
Heather, first and foremost, I think we have an obligation as human beings to also care for other human beings. I think it's imperative for us to do that. Serving others is one of the greatest things that we can do. Now, we also, as you rightfully would probably understand and appreciate, we have an obligation to also manage the monies of the taxpayers in a very prudent and effective way. I believe that a balance can be struck, certainly where both objectives and both expectations are met. Certainly managing budgets, being prudent with our spending to serve the taxpayer does not and should not mean that we turn our backs on those people who need it. Mental health, for example, and we hear about it frequently, PTSD as it affects, for example, veterans. Mm-hmm. These are some of the greatest people that walk in this nation, and I am enraged at the way they are treated sometimes. And so, you know, if I'm sent to Madison, what you can count on is this. I will not turn my back on those people in need, but I will also be certain to manage the monies of the taxpayers of Wisconsin prudently so that both objectives can certainly be fulfilled.
Sure. Paul Berning, I've got a follow-up for both of you, but Paul Berning, a response to Heather's concerns.
Yep. So mental hygiene is a big part of my life. It's a big part of our family's life. We strive every day to keep good mental clarity, and that should be pushed more, I think, not only in our schools, but in, you know, as adults, we should not have it be so taboo to talk about mental hygiene, mm-hmm. mental health. It's very important in making decisions. It's very important in how we live our life. And it's very important in how we treat each other every day. To specifically go to Heather's question, IRIS had some issues that the legislature kind of hiccuped on here in the last couple sessions. Mm-hmm. And I'm a firm believer in defending those who cannot defend their own civil liberties. That includes, but it is not limited to, those with mental disabilities or physical disabilities or a combination thereof. And it's very close and dear to my heart. I have friends that have family members with developmental disabilities, and these people need to be taken care of. It's our obligation as Wisconsinites to, if we're going to encourage procreation when that goes maybe not the way we want it to, we should be willing to step up and take care of those people. So at the bottom line is I will always defend those that cannot defend themselves in their civil liberties.
So recently, this was in the news, the IRIS and the family care issue, of course, as you alluded to. The plan was to have private health insurance companies kind of take over the management of the programs. Earlier in June, the plan was scrapped. Basically, the Department of Health Services said, no, we're not going to privatize this. It caused a lot of the proposed changes caused a lot of tension for folks that had people in the programs. The privatization was purported to save a lot of money, but critics worried that services would have to be reduced for that to happen. So, do these long-term programs like IRIS and family care need to be overhauled or privatized, in your opinion? I'll start with you, Paul Berning, and then I'll go to Shannon Zimmerman.
So, I'd have to look at it more. I have been chatting with individuals, some friends and some acquaintances that have these issues and have had these issues come up because of the changes. In looking at you know, right now, if we say move this to the private sector health insurance, the Affordable Care Act has completely put that industry kittywampus. And so for us to all of a sudden turn it over to an industry that is, I mean, there's so many health insurance companies dropping out right now of giving coverage in certain states, especially here in Wisconsin, with the through healthcare.gov, I think we're down to two providers that put through or will service the state of Wisconsin. You know, that is a national issue. I'm not really wanting to touch on that. But as of right now, the state of private health care, I should say the state of private health insurance, two totally different things in my my opinion. The state of private health insurance says that right now we should not turn that over to a private sector insurance company, because all we're going to be doing is raising the rates, because these are prepaid these services. We already know what they're going to cost, or we have an idea of what they're going to cost. You don't buy insurance knowing for your vehicle, for instance, knowing how much it's going to take to change your tires or your oil. You don't buy insurance for that. You budget for that. And the same with these services. If we're going to provide it, we don't provide it through a third party, which is a big problem in healthcare.
All right. And Shannon Zimmerman, your thoughts on the possibility of the privatization of IRIS and family care, or at least having these private insurance companies oversee them and manage them?
Well, you know, I've read actually conflicting reports on whether or not we would in fact save money by doing that. And so I'll begin my answer by saying that I think that to a large degree, you know, if I advance to Madison, there's going to be additional information that I want to obtain. Mm-hmm. But that said, you know, look, developing financial programs to support things of this nature, it isn't rocket science. It takes a bit of common sense. And this is, again, something that I feel that my background and experience will apply wonderfully to. I don't feel that the privatization is necessarily the right path until I get more data that would even support that. You're exactly correct, Paul. At the national level, it's borderline laughable at this point in time what has occurred there. And there's probably 1,000 reasons for that. So my answer would be this. I believe that there is additional work, additional data that needs to be uncovered in a non-biased manner. And then from that, we use good common sense to develop a program which allows us to provide the care and yet do so fiscally responsibly.
With that, let's take our first break here on the West Side. We have the candidates running for the 30th State Assembly District, the Republican candidates, that is. I'm joined in studio by Paul Berning of Hudson and Shannon Zimmerman of River Falls. The number to call in with your questions or comments, 800-228-5615. We've got one caller on the line. Stay put. We'll be right back after this.
Support for WPR comes from the Museum of Wisconsin Art, with Art on Tap, an exhibition of early Wisconsin brewery art and advertising, July 16th through September 25th, opening polka party, and more at wisconsinart.org. Support also comes from Mayo Clinic Health System, host of the Half Moon Dragon Boat Festival, August 6th at Half Moon Beach in Eau Claire. Dedicated to promoting health, teamwork, and hospice care awareness. MayoClinicHealthSystem.org.
I'm Rich Kramer, and you're listening to The West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. In the coming weeks, we'll be featuring candidates, all of the candidates running for State Assembly and State Senate in our Western Wisconsin listening area. Today, we're featuring the Republican candidates running for the 30th State Assembly District seat. It has been held by Republican Dean Knutson for 6 years, but Dean is stepping down, and now four candidates are running to fill that seat. Today, we're speaking with Republican candidates Paul Berning of Hudson and Shannon Zimmerman of River Falls. The winner of the August 9th primary will face Democrat Scott Nelson and Independent Aaron Taylor. I just lost my place on the sheet. Okay. We appreciate that. 800-228-5615 is the number to call. And let's go straight to the phones now. Willem in Colfax, you are on the air. Thanks for calling in.
Hello. Yeah, I wanted to address the Second Amendment. The Second Amendment, a lot of people, you know, they talk about the Second Amendment, but they don't have never read the Second Amendment. So I'd like to do that. It's very brief. It's only two sentences. The Second Amendment says, a well-regulated militia, that's the subject, being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. That's what the Second Amendment says. And at the time, Washington wrote many letters to the Congressional Congress, to the Continental Congress, about his desire to keep a well-regulated army. So that was a term, well-regulated, that was sort of a military term and meant that there was discipline and people were responsible for their actions, that they weren't just lone operators. And I think that in letters that I've read and editorials that I've read by Wayne Lapeer of the NRA, his assertion is that the Second Amendment is about the right of people to arm themselves to, you know, control the government, or in case the government is out of hand, that we can, you know, be armed against the government, which I think is a total misreading of the Second Amendment.
Okay.
And then I wanted to just say one more thing, is if this is about liberty and freedom, then I wanted to know what these the representatives running for the office, what their view was. Do you think that individual families and women in particular have the right to control their own reproductive rights?
All right.
Or do you think that should be left to the government?
Gotcha, Willem. Thank you very much for the questions. And we got a couple issues there. First off, there's a lot of debate over the Second Amendment, whether it should be changed or what it really means even. Let's start with Paul Berning. And any response on the Second Amendment issue with regards to Willem's comments?
Sure. I'm actually glad he read it verbatim. It is not a very long segment of our Bill of Rights. And if you notice, a lot of the amendments to the Constitution and our Bill of Rights have a phrase at the end of them that says, "And Congress shall make law to regulate such," or, you know, et cetera, right? Mm-hmm. I don't have that verbatim, and I wish I could pull up the full Bill of Rights on my phone, but I can't right now. Bottom line is, the right to bear arms shall not be infringed, period. A well-regulated militia. Now, if you don't think what's going on in Washington right now doesn't alarm you, and if you don't think what's going on in the national scene in regards to anything that's going on in the news doesn't alarm you, again, this is not about hunting. This is not about cowboys, you know, wanting to go out and just carry guns all over the place. This is the right to bear arms. And if you're somebody who is wanting to go and commit a crime, which house are you going to go after? The one that says, "I have a gun in this house," or the one that says, "This is a no-gun zone"? You know, and that's a question you should ask yourself. As far as liberty is concerned, and I'm glad he brought this up, the right to choose, yes, I believe in liberty. I believe in choice. However, I also believe in protecting those that can't protect themselves. And an unborn child that can feel pain, that, you know, can survive abortions, they should be protected too. And so that's – I'm protecting their civil liberties also. I would ask your caller, was it Wilhelm?
Willem.
Yeah. Willem. I would also ask Willem if he is for prostitution. I would – because that is also the government telling a woman what to do or not to do with her body. So, I mean, these are debates that we can go back and forth over and over. Individual liberty is very strong in my blood. I believe in it wholly. And it goes down to not just, you know, choices that are made to redirect a decision that was made or the outcome. Individual liberty is about individual choices and individual, but we teach my kids circumstances, and those circumstances can be what happens with the decisions that you make can be good consequences or bad consequences. Mm-hmm. You want to try to avoid the decisions that are bad consequences. So
Shannon,
that's my answer.
Shannon Zimmerman to you on the issue of the Second Amendment and whether or not it's being, you know, in Willem's eyes, it's a little more restrictive than some would argue, for example, the NRA, and then also the issue of liberty and whether that applies to women and their reproductive choices.
Sure. Well, very simply, I'll begin with the Second Amendment. I am for this Constitution. I am for the Second Amendment, and I support and do not waver on our ability to keep and bear arms. You know, there's a lot of interpretations. Paul hit it on the head. What's happening at the federal level, I think, is inexcusable. So very simply, I will support any legislation which upholds the Second Amendment, period. No questions asked there. The second question, I'm pro-life, period. I understand choice, but you also do, and we do, have an obligation to protect those who cannot protect themselves. So it was well said. I agree completely. Any bill that I am a part of or that I am voting on where the subject of life comes up will receive a vote of support for life from me.
All right. Very good. Now let's go to another issue that's very unique to the 30th State Assembly District. The 30th sits in the western half of St. Croix County. The county is one of Wisconsin's wealthiest. This economic windfall comes from the county's proximity, at least in part, to the Twin Cities. As Ellery Lowry reports, many in St. Croix County commute to work in Minnesota.
According to the Department of Workforce Development in Wisconsin, about 43% of St. Croix County residents commute to Minnesota. The reason for this is best summed up by the executive director of the St. Croix County Development Corps, Bill Rubin.
Well, it's like a bunch of tacks on the floor and a magnet comes by. And so to the immediate west of us is the economic engine known as the Minneapolis-St. Paul Metropolitan Statistical Area.
With Interstate 94 cutting right through St. Croix County, residents have easy access to the Twin Cities. This easy access allows county residents to reap the benefits of the high-paying jobs within the cities. Despite almost half the county leaving to commute, the rest prefer to stay home to work. Workers staying within the county are also seeing benefits from the relationship between the Twin Cities and St. Croix County. An economist with the Department of Workforce Development, Scott Hodek, shares that the county has seen a lot of growth because of this relationship. Some businesses from the Twin Cities have moved into the county. Commuters have extra money to spend locally. Even though the Twin Cities provide higher average wages, eventually people tend to decide they would rather not commute anymore. Scott Hodek says this can be beneficial for the county.
What's great about that kind of situation is then if you're St. Croix County and you're sending your people across the border, they're picking up those skills and things over there, and they may decide, you know what, I could create a spinoff of this company, or I could create a company that does this so I can stay closer to home.
The average household income in St. Croix County ranges from $83,000 to $106,000. Ellery Lowry, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Thank you for that, Ellery. And I'll go to Shannon Zimmerman with this. You've both kind of touched on this, the powerhouse that is the Twin Cities Metro. Definitely benefits for the region, for the district. Are there any challenges, though, with trying to, if people are going to where the wages are highest, is it harder to attract qualified workers to, you know, this side of the border, since you're so close to the job markets in the Twin Cities metro area across the border?
This is a topic that I undoubtedly could go on for a bit with, so I will be as concise as possible here. First and foremost, what we're dealing with is a glorious opportunity in this Western District. And I really want to emphasize that because cities like Madison, cities like Milwaukee and those regions are fairly developed. So if you're looking purely at upside and opportunity, I contend that the Western portion of Wisconsin has the greatest upside. And we do want certainly monies from across that border coming into our state. In fact, I think that strategically everything we do in the next coming years needs to be built around ways we enhance that. Mm-hmm. Let's hit that money coming into Wisconsin. Now, as an employer who hires software engineers, project managers, and 130 people actually that now call our office home, we do have to recruit from the cities. And I will tell you, we do not have the luxury of paying what I maybe would refer to as central Wisconsin wages. Mm-hmm. We have to compete with the Twin City Metro. So what's the problem? It's two parts. First, it is behavioral conditioning. Many of the residents in the western part of the state have been conditioned for years to assume that, oh, the higher paying jobs are across that river. Mm-hmm. That's not true. I've worked extensively with Bill Rubin on this subject, and I've been active in River Falls in the development of a program called Work River Falls, where we are actively marketing great jobs, high-end professional jobs to these people who now today drive across the river. The second opportunity for us lies in tighter integration with education in the private sector business. We have internships. That's not enough. We need to reform the way the UW system integrates with private sector business so we catch these wonderful resources before they take jobs across the river. And I'll stop there for now because I could just keep going.
Paul Berning, your thoughts. First of all, the possible disadvantages of trying to recruit people from that side of the border to our side, and also just speak to how specifically unique this district is because and other districts in that region because of the Twin Cities Metro.
Yeah, there's a couple areas that have the feed back and forth, and certain areas, La Crosse and, mm-hmm. and Superior, have Superior, that has that yeah. with Duluth, not at the magnitude that we have with the Twin
Definitely
Cities
not.
Having, you know, a couple million people metro-wide to try to draw from. Mm-hmm. You know, one thing that people are talking to me a lot about is not necessarily bringing and developing Western Wisconsin into this, you know, kind of pseudo St. Paul area is more, or pseudo Madison type area. People are talking about, you know, yes, bring businesses in so that we have the revenue for our state, but also make sure that we have controlled growth so that we're not growing out of control and we lose that charm that we have as Western Wisconsin. I agree with Shannon in the integration with the UW system with private sector businesses. As a matter of fact, I was talking with a friend of mine who was going to work with us on the software that we were going to develop for education, and we were going to use it to springboard people into proper placement for universities for them out of high school so that they're not going a year and a half in and then realizing, or 2 years in, taking classes for a major and realizing mm-hmm. that that's not good. I digress off of what we were talking about, which is what people have been talking with me about. And those are the people that are not going to start a business or bring a business over or spin off a business from the same Twin Cities area. It's the people that are going to work at 3M or are going to work at Anderson Windows or are going to work downtown St. Paul at St. Paul Companies and places like that, and reciprocity, getting that put back into place. Now, I realize that the ball is not in our court any longer. It's in Minnesota's court because we're willing to work on it. However, I'm willing to help push and help restore that, talking with legislators across the river, et cetera. But we do need to continue to build a base of jobs in this area and re-educate through either a K-12 and the UW system that it's okay to stay in Western Wisconsin and work and live and play.
That it is. 800-228-5615. We've got a caller on the line. Pat, stay with us. We'll be right back. And we'll have more with Shannon Zimmerman and Paul Berning, Republican candidates running for the 30th State Assembly District seat.
Wisconsin Life is out in Wisconsin.
My name is Shelley Wollerman, and I am a certified arborist. The hardest part about learning to climb is to trust your system. I can almost guarantee you the tree will fail before your gear does. So you have to trust your rope.
Wisconsin Life, the people and places that sound like home. Mondays and Wednesdays during Central Time and online all the time at wisconsinlife.org.
Support for WPR comes from Country Travel Discoveries. With Colorado's vintage railways and West Virginia's mountain railroads, vintage train tours through mountains, countryside, and historic destinations. CountryTravelDiscoveries.com. Support also comes from Mayo Clinic Health System, host of the Half Moon Dragon Boat Festival, August 6th at Half Moon Beach in Eau Claire. Dedicated to promoting health, teamwork, and hospice care awareness. MayoClinicHealthSystem.org.
You're listening to The West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for joining us this Monday morning. We're talking with the Republican candidates hoping to take the seat that Dean Knutson of Hudson is leaving. He was the representative for the 30th State Assembly District seat district since 2010. He's decided as of last year that he will not run for re-election. Now it's wide open. Two Republicans, a Democrat and an Independent, are hoping to take that seat. In the studio with me are the Republicans, Paul Burning of Hudson and Shannon Zimmerman of River Falls. They will face each other in an August 9th primary. The winner of that will go up against Democrat Scott Nelson in the November general election, as well as Independent Aaron Taylor. 1-800-228-5615 is the number to call. Pat has been on the line for us, with us for a while. Pat, you're on the air. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Good morning, gentlemen. From Paul and Shannon, I would like to hear specifically what their views are on Common Core and if they think the state of Wisconsin should do away with Common Core and have the school districts develop their own standards.
All right. Very good. Paul Burning, I think that has already been addressed by the legislature, but your thoughts on Common Core?
Yeah, Common Core is a standard that's passed down from Washington. It is not mandated. It is suggested. One of the areas that we're looking at is that most of the entrance exams for college will be built around this curriculum. I like local control. That's a big subject for me that goes all the way down to individual liberty. I was listening to one of your earlier programs, Rich, and you know, local control is versus individual liberty is always in question, but it's easier to talk to your neighbor who's on your city council or your school board. So I would totally be in favor of local districts coming up with their own curriculum or finding their own curriculum, which has already been allowed by the Department of Public Instruction. So as far as federal mandates are concerned, I will fight federal mandates, funded or unfunded. And for the local government officials that I've been talking to, you've also got my word that I will fight funded and unfunded mandates coming down from Madison, because that, you know, what's good for Milwaukee isn't maybe necessarily good for the Township of Hudson or the Village of Roberts.
Shannon Zimmerman, your thoughts on Common Core and the suggestion that it be the new norm for education?
Well, first of all, I think that education and effective education and the variety of ways we can do that for our children is very important. I never underemphasize that. I stress it wherever I go. Common Core, I do not profess to be an expert. Maybe my age puts me in a category where you know, we did things a little different when I was in school. That said, the concerns I have with Common Core are as follows. I use my son, my adult son, and he's got two daughters and number three next month, so we're excited about that. Mm. But I use him as my example. His eight-year-old comes home and she's got homework and wants to sit down with dad and wants to do that homework. And they struggle because it's foreign to him. And so let's set aside what maybe some would argue is innovation in education for a moment. We now have actually separated a father and a daughter from doing something that I think is very, very important. So I, as a result of that, I have issues with Common Core. I have issues with the federal government either recommending firmly or certainly mandating to the states what they can and cannot do. I think that we need to have greater flexibility in certainly how we educate, but I don't necessarily think Common Core is the way to go.
800-228-5615. We've still got about 10 minutes with the candidates Paul Burning and Shannon Zimmerman here on the West Side. They are hoping to represent the 30th State Assembly District, which is in far western Wisconsin.
Can I add to that too? And I'm Shannon brought up a very good point about his family, and my son is in the Gifted and Talented program in Hudson, and he's extremely, extremely bright. I'm glad he took after his mother in that aspect, right? So anyway, one night I sat down and I took it upon myself to try to help him with math because he said he was struggling with it. And the processes that they have in place to solve math problems, I think, Shannon, that's what you're probably alluding to, is more or less the mathematics that are being taught inside of this type of curriculum. And my son's just like, Dad, I can do this faster in my head, and this takes forever, and I don't get it. I just don't get it. And for my oldest to say I don't get it, that's pretty significant. So I just wanted to add that in there, that something needs to change in that regard. And I would encourage parents and anyone who's concerned about it, go to your local school board and see if there's a committee that they would let you sit on. That's where you can really help make changes in that regard. And rather than, you know, being social justice warriors, we can actually get involved and do something about that. So anyway, I'm sorry if I took up more time, but
that's
I wanted
right.
to make sure that
that's
that
right.
Going.
We appreciate it. I'd like to talk about roads. Wisconsin has been listed as having the fourth worst roads in the nation. At the same time, we've got a road funding problem here in the state. We rely on gas tax to pay for repairs, but it hasn't been increased for some time now, for about 10 years, I believe. A state commission has recommended many ways, from tolls to raising the gas tax 5 cents per gallon, I think, to fix the road funding deficit. Do you think it's time to increase taxes or fees to keep road projects on track? And we'll start with Paul.
So this is a subject that's been brought up quite a bit.
As right on the border, it could be tolls, too.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm not against tolls. However, you know, how do you make that fair? How do you spread that across the board? Driving on roads is a liberty that we have. It's a liberty that's given to us by the state, and we're licensed to be able to do it, and it brings us our food. It brings us our goods to Walmart and other stores, downtown River Falls, downtown Hudson. And this is a big problem with the transportation budget. Last year, we bonded just over 20% of the transportation budget, which is a completely separate. It doesn't come out of the general purpose revenue. It comes out of a specific stream of funding. And if you're running deficits, you have to find ways to bring in new revenue. And if you have a situation like you have the gas tax, which is a flat per gallon tax, it's not a percentage like the income tax or the sales tax. So it's a consumption based tax. But roads benefit everybody, from someone who, even if they never leave their house, if they need an ambulance or they need police, they need that. So we need to come up with a solution to close that gap, because we can't be bonding for roads continuously. You bond them for large projects. You know, that's just like mortgaging a house or buying a new car. Most people are not going to write a check for $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 or $500,000 or $250,000, right? So you utilize the bonding system for what it's there for. Don't utilize the bonding system to fix patches of state roads that could be fixed out of the general purpose fund. So maybe I'm going a bit too long here, but this is something that has been brought up to me continuously, especially by local town and city, mm-hmm. Municipality chairpersons. And so with that being said, it's going to take a bipartisan effort to figure out a new stream of revenue, a new means of revenue. And, we have to look at all the options. Am I against it initially? I think that we should be looking at the Department of Transportation. I understand an audit was requested but was vetoed by the governor last year or the year before. Mm. I think we should audit the DOT before we promise new streams of revenue, but that's not the long-term solution. The long-term solution is not bonding.
And Shannon Zimmerman, your thoughts on this issue, deficit in the transportation budget for years now, and a lot of bonding, I think billions of dollars overall over the past 4 years or so to fill that gap. So I guess what's the crystal ball solution?
So first and foremost, I don't think that the answer is pushing our problem or pushing our pain down the road. Mm-hmm. We don't do that at home with our home budgets, and I don't think the state should do it as well. So I think that all we're doing is we're pushing out the pain, if you will. We have to address this issue, and this is an issue worthy of being addressed. Roadways, transportation, infrastructure, these are vital not only to our residents, but they're also vital to an economic opportunity that's on the western part of the state. The corridor from the border to Eau Claire, I believe, is either crested or is near cresting the most traffic corridor now in the state of Wisconsin. It's substantial. And that's important when you're recruiting companies. That's important when you are recruiting talent and people to live here. So my answer is that it can't be pushed out anymore. We have to address it. Now, the how we address it. I would entertain maybe the idea of toll roads. Now, they need to be well thought out. I'm not a fan of raising tax. I do not like to raise tax. I think that there's other opportunities within the state budget where we can use some common sense identify the funds where we can address this issue, not push out the pain, and do so without hurting our taxpayers.
Let's go to the phones for the final time today. We've got Tim, who's been waiting on the line in Hudson. Tim, thanks for calling in. We are close to the end of this program, so if you could be brief, we'd appreciate it. What's on your mind?
All right. Thank you. It's not Tim, it's Kim.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yes. Both are going seeking to go to a fairly contentious environment in Madison and coming from private sector lives. So I'd like to know what accomplishments from your career you will look to and how you will apply those accomplishments in your work in the assembly.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Shannon Zimmern, let's start with you.
Great question. You know, look, I think that, you know, having grown up, to be blunt about it, growing up a poor kid in Wisconsin, you know, running my paper routes and slinging square bales, you develop a humility, you develop a resilience and a persistence that I think is exactly what's required in Madison. You also, in building a multi-million dollar company that's now global, you can't do that without an ability to negotiate, certainly, but also to make sure that things get done. I believe that you know, my career, my focus on objectives, the fact that I don't have a love affair with politics. I don't need to do this, if you will. I want to do this so that I can perform against objectives and then go home and look my kids, my friends, my family in the face and say, I did good by you.
And Paul Berning, your thoughts to Kim's question. Why jump into this contentious it's kind of a recap of what I asked earlier, but
Yeah, it is very contentious, and it is not a fun environment to be in all the time. I am enjoying this. However, you know, when it comes down to it, why does somebody join the military? Why does somebody join the police force? Why does somebody, you know, become a nurse or a doctor? Those are not fun and inviting professions all the time. Going down to Madison, you know, you got to be a professional. I feel like that is something that I carry with myself. My ability to take competitors in my past life and owning a tech brokering firm and having two competitors that wanted nothing to do with each other and ended up forming a symbiotic relationship where they can't work without each other now, I believe that's something that I can bring to Madison, because it's not about being Democrat or Republican. It's not about being left or right. Ronald Reagan said it best when he said it's about either an up or a down. So I'd love to be your representative. I need your vote on August 9th.
All right, gentlemen, thank you so much for the discussion. That was fantastic. We had in the studio with us Paul Berning of Hudson and Shannon Zimmerman of River Falls, both running for the 30th State Assembly District seat. They are up against each other in August 9th primary. Then they'll face a Republican and a Democrat and an incumbent in November. Thanks for listening. Thanks to Team Westside. We'll be back next week featuring the Democrats running for the 29th State Assembly District.